an Elections Policy Committee meeting. Members, in your packet are the minutes from the February 23rd meeting. Representative Freiberg, have you had a chance to review those minutes?
Yes, I have, and they look great.
Great enough to move today?
Sure, I'll move.
All right. Representative Freiberg moves the committee minutes from February 23rd. Any corrections? Seeing none, hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Our first bill on the agenda today is going to be House File 345. Representative Zerwas is here with us. And Representative Zerwas, I will move the bill before the committee, and our destination on this is HHS Finance. So I will move House File 345 to be re-referred to the committee on HHS Finance. Representative Zerwas, welcome to the committee. If you'll proceed with your testimony on your bill, we'd appreciate it. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Mr. Chair, there's an A17-0043 delete all amendments. That doesn't substantially change the bill. It just it mirrors it with Senate language. And if you could move that amendment, I would appreciate that, sir.
Representative Zerwas, I will move the A17 amendment to get the bill in the order in which you would like it. Members, any questions or discussion on the A17 before we vote on it to get the bill in the form that the author is looking for?
Nope.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Representative Zerwas, to your bill as amended, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House Bill 345 is the palliative care bill that was that's been heard in HHS reform and the long-term care subcommittee. We're here today because it sets up an advisory council. And so with that, we have a brief testifier, Ellie Beaver from the Cancer Action Network, to give a little bit of background. But we're here solely because the bill sets up the advisory council, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. Though, state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Ellie Beaver. I'm the Government Relations Director for the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network here in Minnesota, and we have been working with Representative Zerwas on establishing this advisory council. We think palliative care is a really important part of cancer treatment, as well as treatment for other chronic and serious diseases. Palliative care can be provided alongside curative treatment as well as during end-of-life care in hospice. So we're pleased to be working with Representative Zerwas and would encourage your support for the bill. And I'm here to answer any questions.
Members, questions on the bill. Thank you for your testimony. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I got the A1 amendment, I guess, was drafted to the original bill. But I guess the question I have before I offer that, Representative Zerwas, is there a reason why normally when we set up commissions like this, we have in statute a standard compensation, $55 a day for people who attend the meetings. Is there a reason why you went the other way of reimbursing expenses and no compensation?
Representative Zerwas.
Mr. Chair and members, I saw the A1 amendment posted. I haven't had a chance to talk to the advocates. At this point, it's our intention to not have the A1 amendment and address it and HHS Finance. It was drafted that way because the advocates didn't think there needed to be compensation, and that's something that we can talk about in HHS Finance.
Representative Nelson.
Well, Mr. Chair, looking at the individuals, they're going to be on this. They're going to be giving up a lot of time, and this is, I support the bill. So I want to say that first off, I support the bill. It's just, it's a good. We need to look into this. Having gone through and dealing with this last summer myself, with family members, it's a matter. They do good work, and this needs to be. This is a good committee to set up or a council to set up. But I think if we should follow. I'd like us to follow the normal procedure we do for compensating members of this so that we have a control on that and they're not getting wildly compensated. You know, someone could offer expenses and much more than the $55 a day. This kind of puts a cap on it. So, Mr. Chair, with that, I'm going to move the A1 amendment and
Representative Nelson moves the A1 amendment. If it is successful, it will be incorporated in the appropriate spot in the DE amendment. Representative Zerwas, comment to the amendment and or other comments to your bill at this time?
Mr. Chair, members, at this point I haven't had a time to talk with the advocates from the broad coalition that are behind the subdivision 8 within the delete all amendment, line 3.3, subdivision 8, no compensation. Public members of the council serve without compensation except for reimbursement from the commissioner for allowed actual and necessary expenses incurred in the performance of the public member's council duties. That's how the bill is right now. That's how I prefer it stay as we move in to HHS finance, and we can address this further at that point.
Representative Zerwas, you are correct. This is a policy committee, and that's a fiscal issue, and you are going to a fiscal committee on that. Should this not be successful, will you continue to work with the concerns that Representative Nelson has as you move forward to the HHS Finance Committee, should the bill be re-referred today?
Mr. Chair and members, quite frankly, as we're trying to put together budget targets and put together an HHS finance bill that fits within those budget targets, I just want to make sure that adding a cost onto this, that the advocates that are pushing this are not right now behind driving that expense. I don't want to submarine this bill because of that added cost. And so that's why I'm leery of taking the amendment at this time. I want to work with with the members and with our HHS finance chair and staff and make sure we have a bill that can come in under target and be a part of our omnibus bill moving forward out of HHS finance.
Representative Nelson, follow up? Okay. Other discussion on the A1 amendment? All those in favor of adopting the A1 amendment at this time signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
The motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Representative Zerwas, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 345 creates a palliative care committee council to look at how we can better integrate from our education programs, from our medical schools, all the way through long-term care, utilizing palliative care and a whole body experience of caring for people dealing with chronic and terminal diseases. I think it's a better way to take care of Minnesotans, and I urge your support.
Before we take any member questions, is there any members of the public or others here today who would like to testify on the matter before the committee, which is House File 345 as amended? Seeing no one coming down or identifying themselves, members' questions. Representative Zerwas, seeing no questions from the members or public input, I will renew my motion that House File 345, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? The motion prevails. Representative Zerwas, you also have another bill here this morning, House File 526. I will move House File 526 before the committee to again be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Finance. Representative Zerwas, to your bill, sir.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 526 creates a Board of Occupational Therapy Practice. Currently, occupational therapists are licensed under the Department of Health. This would move that from under the Department of Health and create a Board of Occupational Therapy, not unlike a dentistry board, the nursing board, or the medical board for physicians. This was heard in health reform. There is no opposition that's been identified, including from the Department of Health. And since the board is being created, it needed to come to this committee, Mr. Chair, as a part of the legislative process. I do have one brief testifier to talk a little bit about occupational therapy and how they're currently regulated and how this bill would change that.
Thank you, Representative Zerwas. Ma'am, welcome to the committee. You'll identify yourself for the record and who you represent, and then proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Karen Sames.
I am representing the Minnesota Occupational Therapy Association and asking for your support for House File 526. This bill is not requesting to change any part of our scope of practice or what's being regulated. Rather, we're asking for a change in who regulates us. There are nearly 5,000 occupational therapists and occupational therapy assistants in Minnesota. We are the largest group of health professionals currently regulated by the Department of Health. And as Representative Zerwa said, other health professions have their own boards, such as medicine, nursing, etc. We have been regulated by the Minnesota Department of Health since 1996. The staff at the Department of Health meet three or four times a year with an advisory committee made up of seven members, two occupational therapists, two occupational therapy assistants, a medical professional, and two public members. Moving the authority to regulate occupational therapy practice from the Department of Health to a Board of Occupational Therapy would give greater accountability for regulating the profession to occupational therapy practitioners, as is the case in 40 other states. Having a named board under Minnesota Statute Section 214 would make it easier to have statutory changes apply to health licensing boards also apply to occupational therapy. So we are proposing to create a Board of Occupational Therapy to regulate the profession that would have 11 members, 5 occupational therapists, 3 occupational therapy assistants, and 3 public members. 2 of the public members must have either been a recipient of OT services or have a family member who is a recipient of OT services, and 1 member must be a healthcare professional or healthcare provider licensed in Minnesota. So what the bill does is basically strike the word commissioner and insert board, and then add a description of who would sit on the board and the limits of the authority of the board. We think that with the growth in the number of practitioners in the profession now to be almost at 5,000, the time is right to create a board of occupational therapy and make our profession responsible for regulating it, as is the case with most other professions. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony today. There are no amendments to the bill. Is there anyone present today who would like to speak on the matter before the committee? House File 526. Anyone present who would like to speak on House File 526? Seeing no one, there is no public testimony on this bill. Members, questions for Representative Zerwas on the matter before the committee? Seeing none, Representative Zerwas, we will give you the final word.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members. House File 526 will be re-referred to HHS Finance, and the big thing is making sure that making the switch to the board doesn't increase licensure fees on practicing occupational therapists, and we'll determine that with the fiscal note.
Representative Zerwas, I will renew my motion that House File 526 be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Services Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, the motion carries. You are on your way, Representative Zerwas.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members.
Representative Lewick, we'll have you come down, and then Representative Hugh will have you on deck with your testifiers and your bill as the one following Representative Lewick's bill. Representative Lewick, welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. We've got House File 1003 before us, and
Representative Lewick, I'm going to move that, and so we do officially have it in front of the committee. I will move House File 1003 to be re-referred to the General Register. It is now before the committee. Representative Lewick, if you'll proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This bill deals with regulatory authority, and obviously any time you do that requires rulemaking authority. And in the interest of making sure that our agency has the most flexibility in how they go about that, we want to add that process or allow that process of good cause exemption rulemaking, which for straightforward things, that's a more efficient way for the agency. So that's the reason why we're here, and I'd certainly appreciate your support for that. It would, where the agency determines, allow them to move faster on pretty straightforward things.
Representative Lewick, there are no amendments that have been filed for this bill. So with that, I'm going to ask if there's anybody from the public who would like to speak on behalf of the matter that's before the committee, House File 1003. Good morning and welcome. If you'll state your name for the record and share your testimony with us. Welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members, and thank you. My name is Greta Gauthier, and I'm the Legislative Director with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you briefly about House File 1003. There are a couple of government operations items in the bill. The first is that it gives our agency the good cause rule to go ahead and adopt this language into our rules, and that is the quickest way we think that we can make this happen, so we appreciate that. The second thing is that we are not sure if this bill will have fiscal implications for our agency. The language on line 1.12, placing the 16 years in place, is fairly new, so we do have a fiscal note underway on that, and that fiscal note will be done on March 6th, so we are holding off until we find out for sure whether that will incur costs in our agency. Mr. Chairman, we did express other concerns with the environmental policy of this bill in that committee, so I won't go into those here. But just wanted to get those on the record. And I'd be happy to take any questions, Mr. Chairman.
Members, questions for the testifier. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so I've got a handout that was given here that says this bill would allow polluters to discharge more effluents into our waterways, which would be polluting our waterways more than they are now. I guess the 16 years, maybe this part is for the author, the 16, no sooner than 16 years. That is, so if we go with stricter standards within 16 years of a plant being built, they don't have to come up to the new standards. Is that how I'm reading that? Or Representative Lewick, or how does that do? I haven't seen that before.
This bill changes absolutely no standards. What it does do, and somebody, your particular background, when we build a new plant, huge investment for the local unit of government, what this would do is provide some stability, and new plants, period, have to come to all the existing standards. What this would do is provide that local unit of government with some assurance that they're going to be able to recoup that huge investment, typically a bonding process, before the plant would reach its normal engineering obsolescence. It doesn't change a single rule out there. And there's other pieces of paper floating around that talks about several billion dollars worth of costs that are out there for our local units of government that basically collectively Minnesota's in arrears on right now. So this is an attempt that as we go through and try to eat away at that huge future cost that our wastewater treatment plants in particular have, that we make sure that we invest one time and there's some stability there for that local unit of government. So basically they get to pay the mortgage off before there's any radical changes. And now it wouldn't stop if we came up with some epiphany that there was some brand new thing that was absolutely had to be changed. Certainly then we could come back and deal with that as an agency and the legislature. But this provides, let's make sure that we put that plant in place, meet all the new standards, and then let it operate and pay the mortgage off before we go in and apply any new standards that could come out in the future.
Representative Nelson.
So, Mr. Chair and Representative Lewick, the way I heard what you said, we're in effect giving them, from the day that they complete the plant, a 16-year grandfather in against any new rules. And I think you also, because of where you live, you want to make sure we have clean water. And I think we all want to make sure that is. But I guess that's what I'm reading this is, and from what your answer, that's what I'm hearing too, is that they would get a time period, a grace period, I guess, that new standards come out. They don't have to put a lot of money into bring up to those new standards until 16 years after they build the plant.
Representative Lewis.
That's correct, and it's taking a design engineering approach to this, we come up to the newest standards, we build the plant to do that, And then typically we're going to be in at least a 10 or more often a 20-year bond. In other words, we're going to have to, they're going to be paying for that. So before we go into a major new upgrade, and this is things that are not on the books right now, but if we do put in new standards down the road, that particular plant will be able to go back to their existing permit, and that will stay stable until the point where they reach that 16-year point. Then they're going to have to come up to the standard. It just puts a level of stability in there so we can recoup that investment that's being paid off at the local unit of government. And again, it changes no future standards. It simply allows a clock, and as we know, it takes typically several years at a minimum to put a new standard in place. So if today a permit was issued under this situation and we started on the rulemaking process to change the new standard, it would probably be 3 or 4 years down the road. In other words, we're eating on that clock, and that just puts a 16-year window in there for those local units of government to recoup that investment.
Representative Nelson, follow-up?
No, I guess not this time. I'm just trying to think here.
We do have one more testifier. Representative Mason, I will let the other testifier come in, and we'll be right back to you if that's all right. Ms. Betsy Lawton. Ms. Lawton, welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name and who you represent and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Betsy Lawton. I am the Water Quality Associate at the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy. This is a 43-year-old environmental organization that specializes in environmental law and policy. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today on HF 1003. I'm here today to express MCEA's opposition to House Bill 1003, and there's three reasons that MCEA opposes this bill. First, it gives a free pass for those who discharge pollution into our lakes, our rivers, and our streams, and this is in violation of the Clean Water Act. Second, it increases uncertainty about the validity of permits because permits that violate the Clean Water Act can be challenged. And third, it will result in delay in making needed changes to clean up our waters and increase the costs of eventual cleanup. So I'll expand just a bit on each of these three points. First, the free pass for pollution. So as you've heard, this legislation exempts sewage plants and industrial facilities that construct a new facility from meeting any new limits that are needed to protect water quality if that would require the facility to make some additional capital investment. Without these limits, the facilities could discharge more pollution that's safe for our waters. And the exemption lasts for 16 years. This is a fairly lengthy period of time. It doesn't appear to be based on costs of compliance to meet the new standard. It doesn't appear to be related to the time needed to upgrade or the impact of the facility's pollution. Second, because this law conflicts with federal law, the Clean Water Act, it actually increases uncertainty about the validity of permits rather than decreasing uncertainty. A quick explanation of how these limits are set. First, states like Minnesota set levels of pollutants that are necessary to keep Minnesota waters clean. They set levels to protect waters for fish, for swimming, for boating, for drinking. These levels are called water quality standards, and I think you've heard a little bit about that term already. And they apply to an entire water body. So new and updated standards are adopted as PCA identifies new pollutants that are causing problems in Minnesota waters. For example, the most recent adopted standards were to protect Minnesota waters from excess algae. So also under the Clean Water Act, Minnesota must issue permits for pollution discharged from sewage plants and industrial facilities to these rivers and lakes. These permits must limit the amount of pollution entering our waters, and this is to keep our waters from becoming too polluted. And the state must reissue these permits every 5 years. This five-year time frame is important because it's meant to ensure that we're constantly upgrading our facilities and keeping our waters clean. When the permits are reissued, the Clean Water Act, this is the federal law, requires the new permit to include limits that reflect the latest data. We need to know what's in the water and what's coming out of the facility. And it also must include limits that meet those water quality standards that I just spoke of that set safe levels of pollution in our waters. It's these limits the limits to meet the standards we need to protect fish and swimming and drinking water that the facilities would be exempt from under this bill. So if a permit doesn't contain these limits to meet the water quality standards or doesn't comply with the existing standards that are currently in place, the permit violates the Clean Water Act. So here, where the state law would conflict with the federal law, the permit can be challenged in state court and really doesn't provide the type of certainty that the facility might be looking for. So third, finally, the bill would ultimately increase costs, could ultimately increase costs for some facilities. Water quality standards are designed to keep waters from becoming too polluted. Under this bill, a sewage plant operator could choose to delay those upgrades to its facility. But preventing pollution from these sewage plants is far cheaper than cleaning it up after it happens, after the water's already become polluted. So in the long term, municipalities would have to deal with higher cleanup costs instead of the upfront cost of preventing pollution before it happens. In the meantime, water pollution will harm public health, fish populations, and tourism. So ignoring the problem of dirty water doesn't make it go away. It just makes it more and more expensive to clean up in the future. Thank you.
Slotin, thank you for your testimony this morning. Representative Mason, you had a question as well.
Thank you. I think the testifier probably answered them. My question was going to be, how does this help us clean up our water, if, especially with that 16-year window? And again, I've heard people talk from Flint, Michigan, so I think our responsibilities to get clean water is extremely important.
Other member questions on the matter before the committee? Representative Tice.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Lewick. I'm just really glad to see the bill here because I know I've heard of several municipalities that have just built a water treatment plant. They're only a couple of years into paying that one off, and all of a sudden, bang, they're supposed to do another big capital improvement project to redo their plant, so to say, which is not just, you know, a few hundred bucks here. We're talking millions. And so I understand the clean water standards, but sometimes when they come through fast and furious, and it's really hard for the technology and the cities to keep up with this. If you've got a smaller community, that's a huge investment. That takes more than a couple years to take. Well, it takes quite a while just to pay off the water treatment plant, and now you're looking at upgrades before you even have it paid off. So I think we need to be cognizant of what we're asking our folks to do and the time frame in which they need to turn around and do this. It is a very big expense, and I appreciate the fact that you're addressing it. Thank you.
Representative Tice, I didn't hear a question, just a statement in there, so I will ask once again if there's anyone present from the public that would like to testify on the matter before the committee. House File 1003. Again, seeing no one coming forward, other member questions at this time? If not, all those in favor, I will re-renew my motion that House File 1003 be re-referred to the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
No.
The motion prevails. Representative Lewick, you are on your way.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members.
The next bill that's before us is House File 1047. Representative Keel is the author on that, followed by 1366. Representative Albright, you are on deck with the next bill. Representative Keel, welcome to the committee. I will move House File 1047 before the committee to be re-referred to the General Register. Representative Keel, welcome to the committee. And if you'll set up your bill for us, we'll be happy to hear from you today.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill is in regards to some changes for, we call it ORI or EURI. It really defines it as Agricultural Utilization Research Institute, which has been around for quite some time. I brought with me the director, the CEO of EURI, and I'm going to let him talk about what we would like to do.
Representative Keel, thank you. Sir, welcome to the committee this morning. If you'll state your name for the record, who you represent, and then proceed with your testimony.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Shannon Schlecht. I'm the executive director of the Agricultural Utilization Research Institute. Just quickly, AURI was created nearly 30 years ago by the state legislature to work in the value-added agricultural space. Our mission is to foster long-term economic benefit for value-added products for Minnesota, so really to work with businesses to develop their ideas and to commercialize those ideas. We have in the last year done a client survey. Return on investment is roughly $77 million of additional gross sales through our efforts, $89 million in additional capital improvements, and over 300,000 tons of additional commodity utilized due to the services that we provided to businesses in Minnesota through our client work and our initiatives. We've recently had an Office of the Legislative Auditor program evaluation, and that is the main reason for coming to you today with some statute changes. And we've also had several discussions within our board to look at the statute and see our ways that it could be slightly tweaked to meet our mission and to further the opportunities for Minnesota agriculture. I'll go through these one by one very briefly. The first one is in Subdivision 1 is just to strike the word Minnesota. And we work with entrepreneurs and companies around Minnesota, and we want the flexibility to work with companies in the adjacent states as well to really leverage our resources and to make us more competitive for federal grants to leverage those state dollars that the legislature provides to us. We think that also allows us to bring ideas back into Minnesota that we are seeing in other states or seeing around the world that we could possibly foster here in Minnesota to create new opportunities as well. The second change is around the board of directors, and that is to add two at-large directors to ARI. We currently have a 9-person board that consists of Minnesota agricultural organizations, general farm organizations, Minnesota research and promotion councils, Minnesota legislators, and Minnesota agribusiness. This would add a little bit more knowledge to our organization in terms of at-large positions that we could bring in to provide that expertise that we need to set our strategic direction. That is a direct recommendation from the Office of the Legislative Auditor report last year on our program evaluation. The next change would be to strike Section 4 of Subdivision 3. This is contradictory a little bit to Subdivision 5 that's later on in the bill, where it's the same language basically, but one is a shall and one is a may. And through discussions at ARI, we believe that the flexibility allows us to better be in our mission of fostering long-term economic benefit for Minnesota agriculture. Subdivision 4 is just a small tweak to say that the board will hire the executive director versus all staff. ARI has 28 staff members. It'd be very onerous for the board to be hiring every staff member, so it would just be to hire the executive director. Next change is Subdivision 7, which is our bylaws. We currently are required to submit those to the state registrar. They say they do not do this for any other organization, so we would just prefer to have those published to our website to maintain that transparency and to meet the needs of transparency that the committee would have. Next is around meetings, Subdivision 10. And as part of the Legislative Auditor report last year, it was unclear as to how open meeting law applies to ARI. The language that you see in front of you would clarify how open meeting law applies to ARI for us to meet electronically instead of having to meet in person to do all of our business. My board directors reside all across the entire state. As you can imagine, it's very difficult sometimes to get together, and having the flexibility to meet electronically would be greatly appreciated through that small change. Subdivision 11 is conflict of interest. We agree that a director should not advocate or vote for a measure that they would have a conflict of interest in, but we do believe that they should participate in the discussion and provide factual information. Our board directors are highly knowledgeable, and we would like to have the ability to have them in the room and have those discussions. Section 13 is around funds. This just clarifies when board approval is needed for receipts and expenditures, and as well as increases the level for board approval from $25,000 to $50,000, which is roughly the present value of the amount that was stated 30 years ago when ARI was created. And finally, Subdivision 14 is on accounts and audits. Again, it just clarifies some language in terms of ARI being subject to the legislative auditor, but not annually, and that we are subject to a third-party financial audit that we will make available to the Attorney General's Office of Charitables Division. And again, that is a slight change where we currently have to send that report, and we've been told that is not the correct location for providing that financial audit from a third party. So it just clarifies in some of that language that we've received feedback from trying to do our normal business. Mr. Chair, that's all I have.
Mr. Schleck, thank you for your detail on the bill. I have no amendments, and I have no other testifiers that have asked to testify on the bill. We'll get to member questions in just a minute, Representative Nelson. Is there any member from the public that would like to testify on the matter before the committee?
Any members of the public that would like to testify on the matter before the committee? Seeing none, we will revert to member questions at this time. Representative Swazinski, followed by Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Keel, just have a general comment. Appreciate the you carrying this bill. Appreciate the work with AURI and what they do for rural businesses across the state and metro. I support the bill, so thank you.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Keel. And it appears, going through this, it seems like reasonable things to do. The only caution I have is the piece about allowing money to be spent outside of the state on other entrepreneurs. Other things that we do in the state in the past year, there's been some issues about money being spent in Mexico to protect birds and stuff like that, that some members of the legislature have got all up in arms about the fact that why are we spending our tax dollars for this kind of thing and that kind of thing when it's research. And it's probably the right thing to do, and this is probably the right thing to do, but it's just maybe a word of caution that, especially for the board as you go forward, that be cautious of when you spend money out of the state, because there are, at some point in time, somebody may bring it up in the legislature and it may become a huge campaign issue against or for somebody. So that's just past practice or past things that have happened in the state. I guess I see a little bit of problem that might occur here.
Representative Mason.
Thank you. It's kind of a follow-up to Representative Nelson. I really have a concern about spending the money outstate. Can you maybe give some specific instances where you think that this new change would be beneficial?
Representative Keel.
Mr. Chair, yes. I think there are some real advantages to being able to use Minnesota commodities with ideas that might not be necessarily born in our state. But I would like the executive director to explain a little bit more about what we're looking at.
Mr. Schleck. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, really allowing this, we've been looking at a fee-for-service model and changing our business model. And our work out of state would be on a fee-for-service basis. So we would not be spending taxpayer dollars, but really leveraging funds. So we do projects in Minnesota that we're working with Minnesota companies, and we see the opportunity to have a broader impact by working with companies in other states as well with those Minnesota companies to better leverage the dollars and have a greater impact for the agriculture community is one of the main reasons for looking at this. So again, not spending taxpayer dollars, but allowing AURI to work with those organizations and entities outside the state to leverage those dollars we're already working within Minnesota. The other is make ourselves much more competitive for federal grant opportunities. We look at regional opportunities and being included as an organization. Those typically consist of several companies or organizations, not just in Minnesota, but where we have common interests to try to advance opportunities. And I think this just provides a little bit more clarity for us to be able to do that. Mr. Chair. Thank you. Representative Mason, follow-up?
No, thank you.
All right. I have no other member questions on the list at this time. And there was no public testimony. So with that, Representative Q, we will give you the final word.
I would just ask you to, Mr. Chair and members, ask you to support this bill.
Members, I will re-renew my motion that House File 1047 be re-referred to the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The motion carries. You are on your way, Representative Keel.
Thank you.
Representative Albright, you are next, followed by Representative Erickson.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Albright, welcome to the committee, sir. I will move before the committee House File 1366 to be referred to the Committee on Jobs and Energy. Members, we have a rulemaking provision in here, and I'm going to ask Mr. Gehring if he will identify the parts of the bill that are within the purview of our committee, and then I will turn it over to Representative Albright for a setup and discussion on the House File 1366, which is before us. Mr. Gehring?
Mr. Chair and committee members, so the rulemaking provision that the Chair just references on page 15, this is Section 4, it directs the Office of Administrative Hearings to use the expedited rulemaking process to incorporate changes that are proposed in the bill.
Representative Albright, now we have identified what is before the committee, if you'll give us a background and the need for the expedited rulemaking, we'll be happy to hear from you today. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, this is the biannual work comp bill that comports with the language that both management and labor have agreed to. So there is the non sequitur peace in the valley persuaded to this bill. As Mr. Gehring has said, that your attention is drawn to rulemaking, which is under Article 3, Subdivision 4, which was language that was put into the bill at the urging of the OAH to comport with the language aforementioned in Articles 1 through 3. With that, Mr. Chair, I have two testifiers available if there are questions, both from the Office of OAH as well as Dolly. But in respect of your time, brevity is my friend.
Representative Albright, thank you for letting us know that there are experts, that the members do have questions. So before I go to member questions, I will ask if there is anyone from the public who would like to speak on the matter that is before the committee, House File 1366, to the rulemaking provision that is within the scope of this committee. Let the record show that there was no testimony. Member questions for Representative Albright and or his expert testifiers. Seeing no member questions, Representative Albright, you may get off easy today.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Chair, thank you for your attention to this matter today, and I would urge people to support this bill.
I will take that as your closing statement, Representative Albright.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
I renew my motion that House File 1366 be re-referred to the Committee on Jobs and Energy. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
No.
The motion carries. Representative Erickson, you are at the testifier table, followed by Representative Bliss. You will be our next bill after Representative Erickson. Once again, Representative Erickson is carrying a multifaceted bill that covers many different committees and jurisdictions. We have, through the government operations, a limited scope on this, and so as Representative Erickson is settling in, I am going to move House File 140 before the committee to be re-referred to the Committee on Public Safety and Security. And with that, I'm going to ask Mr. Gehring if he will go ahead and identify those areas that are within the scope and purview of the Government Operations and Elections Commission. Mr. Gehring.
So Mr. Chair and members, so this bill broadly is modifying the process for teacher licensing in Minnesota. Within the scope of the Government Operations Committee are two items. The first relates to the reorganization of it creates a new licensing board called the Professional Educator Licensing and Standards Board to replace the Board of Teaching. And there's also some rulemaking provisions. So the substance that I'll point you to for the reorganization of the board is Section 2, starting on page 3. This creates the board and provides the appointment process and some other items related to the administration of the board. Also related to the board, on page 23, there's section 21 that directs how the powers are transferred from the existing Board of Teaching to the new Professional Educator Licensing Board. And then related to the rulemaking, there are some scattered cross-references throughout the bill that some of which are new provisions related to rulemaking. Some of them are just incorporating existing rulemaking authority that the Board of Teaching has, and instead it's giving it to the new board. But for substance, I point you to Section 11 on page 13. This is the section that cross-references all of the new rulemaking. One policy change here is that the existing law provides a permissive rulemaking authority for the Board of Teaching, and instead that's changed to a mandatory rulemaking for this new board.
Representative Erickson, sounds like maybe Mr. Gehring did a fine job of setting up the scope. As the author of the bill, we'll let you get us started with your comments on the bill. Welcome to the committee, Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. There's also an A15 amendment, Mr. Chair, with an oral adjustment that I would like to have you move, Mr. Chair.
Absolutely. Representative Erickson, I will move the A15 amendment to House File 140 to get it in the form that the author wishes. And before we vote on the amendment, if you want to outline your oral amendment for the committee.
Hi, Mr. Chair and members. On line 1.6 of the A15 amendment, delete the comma and the words following. Delete all of 1.7, 1.8, and 1.9. And insert the period after 16B.371. And members, the reason I offer this oral amendment is I met with the Department of Administration yesterday, and because in 2011 we passed the SMART, which allows small agencies to be under the purview of the Department of Administration. We do not have to list all these specific duties that they would be in charge of if this proposal proceeds into law.
Representative Nelson, you okay with the oral amendment?
Mr. Chair, yes, I am. As Representative Erickson pointed out, that with the SMART, and that part of that is that we have one organization that deals with all the backroom functions of the agencies. Instead of each agency having their own, it was done to help save costs at the state and streamline the functions of the state. So I would agree this is unnecessary language to be in the bill.
Mr. Gehring, I'm going to ask you if you can just incorporate those changes as an author's amendment, or if you need us to vote on those and then vote on the A15 amendment. Procedural question, Mr. Gehring.
Mr. Chair, since you are offering the amendment, I think that you could incorporate that change into your proposed amendment.
I will incorporate the changes as directed by the A15 author, Representative Erickson. And Mr. Gehring, do you have the changes? Mr. Gehring has the changes, right? All those in favor of the A15 amendment as modified, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Representative Erickson, the bill is now in the form that you would like the bill.
And, Mr. Chair, it will be referred to public safety.
Yes.
So yep. That will be included in the final motion. Thank you very much. Members, this proposal that I bring before you, House File 140, as amended, is a result of an audit by the Office of the Legislative Auditor that was done in 2015 and in 2016 delivered to the legislature as a rather condemning statement on the way teachers were being licensed in the state, the difficult process through which they had to proceed to either become initially licensed or to be renewed, and a board that had a lawsuit filed against it and also a contempt of court. So in response to the audit report and their recommendations, we have created in House File 140 as amended a new creation of a board, a governing board called the Professional Educator Licensing and Standards Board. It does remain at 11 members, as the Board of Teaching presently is. The makeup of the board members is changed a little bit. Teachers still have the main membership. Six are teachers, and the other five are school leaders in the form of superintendents, principals, and school board member. So that's the makeup that changes for the board. A recommendation that came from the audit was that we have one entity, and members, the reason we probably had some of the problems that incurred for our teachers and our aspiring teachers was that the Board of Teaching dealt with policy, and then MDE, the Department of Education, issued the license. So we had a runaround whenever there was an application brought forward for especially out-of-state teachers to receive license. Sure. So bringing this under one board, Professional Educator Licensing and Standards Board, seems to us to be the practical and the common sense approach. There is rulemaking, of course, in the bill, which is another part of your purview, which Mr. Gehring has referred to. So I have Christina Pera here from Nonpartisan House Research to answer questions about the rulemaking, but for the most part, the rulemaking either stays as is or is set in statute. In regard to the tiers, there's now a tiered system proposed in this House file. There are four tiers, and those we're placing in statute so that there can't be this play or interaction between this licensing board and the legislature in what is the framework for a teacher's receiving a license or applying for a license.
Representative Erickson, we will have your testifier available for questions at this point. I have one member question on the list, Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Erickson. It's my understanding, and I'm trying to find it, I can't find it now, but that and when we change the board, that none of the existing members will be allowed on the new board. 4.17, I believe it is now. And I know we're, because of the legislative audit, that's why we're changing it. It sounds like we're combining two boards into one. Wouldn't it be helpful if there were some anybody, at least one member or two members on the board that were from these organizations that had been on the board before that could give that in-depth knowledge to blow it all up and give it all new members because you started from scratch and you have no historical knowledge or longevity on it. I know in my local union we have three trustees that are supposed to oversee the money, and we have it set up so that one's elected every year instead of replacing all three in one election. So you have some continuity and knowledge, historical knowledge in there. So can you explain why we're doing all getting rid of everybody and not allowing anyone who served on this in the past to be on it?
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Nelson. We needed a fresh start, and what's going to happen is that we're not combining two boards. We're taking the responsibility that the Department of Education had for issuing licenses and actually telling candidates whether or not it was in their purview, what they needed to do, become licensed, especially out of state, with the Board of Teaching. So we're combining those two for this new creation, and we believe that in having a new creation, we need a fresh start because the staff who will roll over from the Department of Education will bring the institutional knowledge because they actually, and other staff who presently serve on the Board of Teaching, we're assuming that they would stay in place. We'll bring that institutional knowledge, but we believe that having new board members will really bring a fresh start to a board that has a tainted reputation, and we just need a new image for our teacher candidates and our teachers out there so they know that this is an organization, a small agency of integrity. So that's basically the reason, but I will tell you this is a work in progress, and so I'm sure when this bill proceeds to conference committee, as I think it will, we'll have those discussions. So thank you for the question.
Representative Nelson, follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's just that you've expressed some of the concerns I have in institutional knowledge, but that's just a point that maybe not all of them, but maybe one or two are that have been there before and know how to do this will be there. But we can have a difference of opinion. That's why I asked the question.
There is an A16 amendment.
Mr. Chair, that was my amendment, and it's that was already incorporated into the A15 amendment, so you don't need to
offer the A16 at this time. I have no member questions at this time. I will ask if there's any members of the public or others here today who would like to testify on the matter before the committee, House File 140 as amended. Anyone from the public? Good morning and welcome to the committee. They'll state your name and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Rick Keller. I officially represent the Twice Exceptional and Truth Disabled, speaking at this committee on the 28th of February regarding House File 140. Just for the record, the last bill that you had as well, which has to do with sonar hearings and revisor, the legislature has been introducing bills with XXX on them, which means an ability reader won't read strict to an underlying language that expresses last year on the record. Regarding this year on this bill, the Board of Teaching has done one set of rule writing which weren't fully accessible based on Minnesota Statute 16E03 Subdivision 9, which is state agencies are required to make their documents fully accessible. They set their documents in Adobe Reader software reads out loud. The legislature is more compliant than state agencies currently are. They have decided to go with HTML5, which the specialized JAW software for the blind will read straight to another underlying language. It's important as you move ahead to write new rules that state agencies needs to be embedded in a statute that specifically states that they get it in a fully accessible format for fairness and sameness and transparency for public to weigh in on this. I appreciate you, anyone that's willing to introduce something that this relates to as we move ahead for the four-tier system. And that's all I have to say on this.
Mr. Heller, thank you for being with us, and thank you for your testimony today. Anyone else from the public wishing to testify on the matter before the committee? Seeing none, other member questions? Seeing none, Representative Erickson, we are going to give you the final word this morning.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the Committee on Government Operations. It is really, indeed, an honor to have a committee that will review these kinds of procedural changes that we make in law so that we always have accountability and transparency. So I really appreciate it and hope that you could support the re-referral of this to public safety.
I renew my motion of the re-referral of House File 140 as amended to the Committee on Public Safety and Security. All of those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? The motion prevails. You are on your way, Representative Erickson.
Thank you.
Our next bill is going to be Representative Bliss, 1077, and then Representative Nash with our final bill today on the agenda 1504 to follow that. Representative Bliss, would you like to move your bill before the committee to be re-referred to the General Register, sir?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would.
And Mr. Chair? Mr. Chair?
Representative Nelson.
Before he starts, I believe this is his first bill, and I believe he has treats that he should probably pass out while he's doing the bill.
And
it might make it easier for it to pass.
You know, Representative Nelson, that's why we work so well together, because I missed that, and you are on top of that, sir. And I'd also like to thank one of your members, Representative Joaquin, for her treats today as well, being Fat Tuesday and all. That's a very nice opportunity. Thank you, Representative Joaquin.
Yes. We're going to start passing them around.
Very good. It's usually pretty good to have members with something in their mouth when your bill is being presented, because it does cut down on the number of questions I've observed during the time I've been in the legislature. Representative Bliss has moved House File 1504 before the committee to be re-referred to the General Register. Representative Bliss, if you will proceed with your bill, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And as you know, this is a very controversial bill. I call it my great minnow bill. Basically what this does is resorters who have a retail license to sell minnows are currently required some extra licensing to transport the minnows. And this just simply states that if a resorter goes to a licensed wholesaler and purchases the minnows, they don't have to transport them in a special vehicle, but they do have to have the receipts and everything that they're coming from a licensed wholesaler. And I do have a guest here that maybe can go a little bit more in detail if you'd like.
Representative Bliss, it's your call. It's your bill. If you'd like them to testify or be available for questions, it is your call.
Mr. Chairman, Joel Carlson. I own a government affairs business here in St. Paul. I've long represented the community of Minnesota Resorts, which is an association of small family-owned resorts. Our members average about 12 units. And this was a duplication of permits that was costly. And in addition to the cost, though, it put you at the risk of being out of compliance if you were happened to be stopped by a DNR enforcement officer. And so we worked with the DNR to come up with this language. If you're a resorter, you've got a retail license, and you're transporting your own minnows, you don't have to put the decals on your truck. You don't have to buy that transporter license. It just exempts them from that. And the reason we're here in front of this committee, if you look at Section 2 of the bill on the back, is it requires the DNR to update their and cross-reference their rules, and they are just simply given the standard exemption in the Administrative Procedures Act in 14.388 Subdivision 1 Clause 3, which says if the legislature changes the rules, they can just automatically update their rules in the State Register. And that's all this bill does, and we'd appreciate your support.
Thank you. Member questions. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I know we're not the Environment Committee, but I don't sit there, and I know we're here for the good cause exemption on the back page of the bill, but the question I have, and just want to be assured that this is not a way to get around and bring in exotic or invasive species, and that we're not lowering those protections at all. This is just to make it easier for resorters.
Yeah. Representative Bliss?
Mr. Carlson?
I'll let Mr. Carlson address.
Mr. Chairman and members, and I should have mentioned that, Representative Nelson, in my comments, the way this is written, we are fully AIS compliant, and so that there isn't a risk, and I think that's why the DNR was comfortable making this. We have to get it from a licensed minnow dealer in Minnesota. We have to transport it in their packages. We have to have our manifest with us at all times, and so it's AIS compliant, and I should have mentioned that in my comments.
Representative Nelson, follow-up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's just a concern I would have and I think we all should have to make sure that we keep our waters free from the invasive species.
Absolutely. There are no amendments, and I have no other member questions at this time. Is there anyone from the public who would like to testify on House File 1077, which is before the committee? Anyone from the public wishing to testify? Seeing none and hearing none, other member questions? Seeing none and hearing none, Representative Bliss renews his motion that House File 1077 be re-referred to the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the motion carries. Representative Bliss, you are on your way, sir.
Thank you.
In the final 45 minutes that we have today, we will be addressing House File 1504. And as Representative Nash is making his way to the table, I have about 10 testifiers who have signed up in advance, and what we are going to do is give each of those testifiers an opportunity to speak for about 90 seconds to 2 minutes on here, leaving time for public testimony and member questions. It is our hope and wishes that we can get this resolved by noon today. If not, any unresolved matters on this, and if we have to lay over, will take place after 8 p.m. tonight or the completion of the Pension Commission meeting, whichever occurs later. With that, Representative Nash, if you want to move your committee before, your bill before the committee to be re-referred to the General Register.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That is my motion.
Representative Nash moves House File 1504 to be re-referred to the General Register. Representative Nash, if you want to get...
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I would like to remind everybody
Before we go, that the first three testifiers who I have are Steve Huser, Jamie Fuel, if I'm pronouncing that correctly,
Fuel,
and Dana Glade. So those are the first three that we'll be looking at. So if you want to get on cue, and I will continue to announce so that we keep everybody with a chance to provide testimony. Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and would like to remind everybody that you've just had some delicious snacks. So keep that in mind as we go through our conversations on this bill today.
Representative Nash, those are from the previous bill author. You cannot
I'm just trying to piggyback as best I can, Mr. Chair.
For the record.
Mr. Chair, another one of my fine non-controversial bills, a very short bill, and... as our testifiers come down, Mr. Chair and members, this bill is essentially an act to provide for consumers the opportunity to utilize plastic bags across the state. There have been some moves across our state, and particularly in some cities, to ban bags, and we are actually asking to bag the ban. And it's very straightforward. Plastic bags that you get at the grocery store are something that is utilized again and again and again. Statistics show that plastic bags are multi-use. They are infinitely recyclable, that most Minnesotans live very close to grocery stores that can recycle and do recycle plastic bags. And I'm sure all of you are a lot like me, that you have multiple uses around your home. With as many kids as we have, we use them for a lot of different things, from wet bathing suits at the community center to things that the dog may leave in the backyard on our behalf, and they're infinitely reusable. And our supposition today is that we should protect the rights of consumers in the state of Minnesota to have access to plastic bags. It costs the provision or the proposed solution that many in Minneapolis have and across the state is that that by doing this, they're saving the environment. And some studies from MPCA have actually said that the bags are not their I believe they call it the biggest fish that they have to fry. Mr. Chair, I'll, in the interest of brevity, since you said we only have 45 minutes, I'll ask some of our testifiers to come down. But essentially, we are asking for the rights of consumers and to deal with the retailers, grocery stores, and other retailers to be able to provide for their customers that which the customer wants.
Representative Nash, we are going to hear from our first testifier today, Mr. Steve Huser. Welcome to the committee, sir. If you would go ahead and state your name again, 90 seconds to 2 minutes is what we're looking for to get a feel for what folks are thinking about on this today. Welcome, state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Stephen Huser. I represent Metro Cities. Metro Cities is an association of cities in the 7-county metro area. Metro Cities respectfully opposes House File 1504. This bill, specifically Subdivision 3, would eliminate current local control related to customer bags. Metro City's policy does not speak specifically to plastic bags, but supports maintaining local control and decision-making authority that allows municipalities to decide their own local ordinances. This bill would also have the effect of nullifying ordinances that have already been enacted by cities. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for your testimony, sir. Our next testifier is Jamie Fuel. We'll ask you to come forward, and then Dana Gladdy, Deb Kowalski, and then Deb McMillan. Those are the next testifiers if you want to get ready. Welcome to the committee. So state your name for the record, and I'm so sorry I mispronounced your name.
Thank you, Chairman Poole, members of the committee, or Chairman Poole, Chairman O'Driscoll. How do you like that? You got me all.
You've given yourself
members
a promotion.
Members of the committee, now we're even, right? I am Jamie Poole, President of the Minnesota Grocers Association, and I'm here to speak in support of House File 1504. The MGA is a state trade association representing the retail food industry. We have over 300 members with about 1,200 locations statewide. Our members include grocery convenience stores, wholesalers, manufacturers, and anyone that supports the industry. Our member companies are both union and non-union, and we provide about one out of every 20 jobs in this great state. The MGA and its membership are incredibly proud of the communities we serve. Social and environmental responsibility is a priority. We are leaders in voluntary recycling and are dedicated to waste reduction. We continually review our products to ensure that they are the most environmentally friendly products available. Most all bags today are either 100% recyclable or 100% reusable. For over a decade, we've voluntarily encouraged our shoppers to reduce, reuse, and recycle by offering plastic recycling at locations. It's a convenient drop stop, usually right at the door. Millions of pounds are recycled annually. And one of the key things is that the products that are recycled are not just the bags, but they're any plastic products that are used within the home, whether that's a dry cleaning bag, a newspaper bag, the bag that wraps your toilet paper. Those are all taken back at our stores. This is an excellent community service, and a curbside option at this time is not available for these products. We are the only resource to help bring those back in. And they are all converted into products that were used, trucks, in our homes and other ways. The industry has partnered with the Pollution Control over the years to bring additional opportunities to educate consumers and promote choice at checkouts and what makes sense for them and their homes. Local bag restrictions have the potential to interfere with many of these outstanding voluntary efforts. They've shown minuscule impact on litter and reducing weight. They create a multitude of unintended consequences. Providing customers is our top priority. Operating in an environment where local laws cause customer confusion, cost to business compliance, all of which will cause unproductivity and increased costs for all products, all parties concerned. Businesses cannot be the experimental grounds for cities' whims. City-by-city policies create direct market disadvantage to the business localities they're striving to promote. As an incredibly mobile society, consumers will make the choices that fit their needs. We want to be clear that our number one concern as an industry is what the patchwork effect will have on our consumers. The food retail industry prides itself on its ability to ensure our customers have all the convenience and choice that they need and deserve during their shopping experience. Additionally, execution at checkout has many layers of complication. It's hard to implement. It will have a slower checkout. Governmental programs such as SNAP and EBT create a layer of complication, and there are taxation questions. All of this will change the shopping experience. Proposals such as this have a tendency to move us in the opposite direction we intend.
Just a chance to kind of wrap up here. We're a little over time.
And we thank you, Representative Nash, for your leadership, and we support and are happy to stand for questions.
Thank you, Ms. Poole. Why don't you stick by? There may be some questions.
Okay. Yep.
The next testifier is Dana Glade, followed by Deb Kowalski, and then again Deb McMillan. Welcome to the committee, sir. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Dana Glade. I'm with Jerry's Enterprises Incorporated. I'm a director of retail operations, operating 22 food stores in Minnesota under the banners of Cub Foods, Jerry's Foods, County Market, and Rainbow. We feel that the plastic bag ban has had and will have a negative impact on our business, as paper bags cost around 8.5 cents per bag, plastic bags 1.5 cents a bag. And charging a nickel to the customers doesn't cover our costs. It causes stress to the customers that have to pay it, as that's an additional expense to them as they come shopping. EBT customers would not be charged this in Minneapolis with the proposed or the current ban. That causes concerns at the register with our cashiers, which many of them are 16 and 17-year-old cashiers that have to try to discern how many customers, how many bags the customer is going to use, what kind of impact it has for them.
Many of our inner city store customers walk. They transport bags to and from their homes in plastic as a preferred means. If the ordinances go into effect where the Minneapolis would pass a ban and a sister community would not, that causes our customers that can't leave and have an option to not have to pay for bags or want to use plastic bags, that option. It also creates issues with commerce in our areas where they customers that are on the fringe borders between one municipality to the next can go have an alternative shopping channel. We like to give our customers that choice. We do recycle. We recycle cardboard. We recycle plastic bags in our stores at a tone of about 30,000 bags a year. We do what we can to be environmentally friendly in our practices. Reusable bags are an option as well, but we find many customers bag items such as fresh meat and perishable produce in plastic as they put them in the recycled bags for food safety reasons and for cleanliness. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Glade, for your testimony. We'll have Ms. Kowalski come forward, then Ms. McMillan, and then following Ms. McMillan with Mr. McElroy. Ms. Kowalski, welcome to the committee. You'll state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Deb Kowalski with Kowalski's Markets. We have 11 stores in the metro area. We have over 1,600 employees, and we are a civic business. We don't teach our employees customer service. We teach them active citizenship. And we believe that that's because what we can do here and where we have authority, which is our little grocery store chain, is more impactful than trying to save the world. But in the saving the world venue, we also took this up as a case study. And we got the right stakeholders together, including consumers, including front-end staff and directors. And we did a case study on this a few years ago. And what we found is that we found out things. We learned a lot and were surprised by what we learned and what the real carbon footprint is on different things, paper bags, plastic bags, etc. And we made some changes. And what we learned was that once educated, people make different choices. And to be informed and to make those choices that way is the way we want to deal with our customers. The consumers that were involved in the case study made some changes to how they were doing their getting their groceries from the store to home and back. And so I just think that was the big takeaway for us, is that we have a responsibility to educate, and we have a responsibility to listen, and we see our obligation in that education.
Thank you, Ms. Kowalski, for your testimony. Much appreciated. Ms. McMillan, followed by Mr. McElroy, and then Ms. Susan Hubbard will be next, followed by Kiko Vesey, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. Ms. McMillan, welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Chair O'Driscoll and committee members. I'm Deb McMillan. I'm the Director of Government Affairs for the Twin West Chamber of Commerce. We're a business organization that represents more than 700 businesses and about 55,000 employees in the western suburbs. I'm here today in support of House File 1504. Twin West Chamber of Commerce represents 10 different municipalities, a regional marketplace in the western suburbs. We're supportive of policy that provides uniformity in the marketplace and prevents the creation of patchwork of regulation and mandates by the municipality. Our member businesses are very consumer conscious and aware of competitive pressures. So it will come as no surprise that the business community has deep concerns about policies that take away consumer choice. Consumers will be left confused and frustrated with the policy differences from city to city, especially if something as innocuous as paper and plastic shopping bags. What if I've forgotten my reusable bags? Do I have to pay for a bag? Is there an option? What is the fee? In addition to customer confusion and frustration, the increased cost to the businesses to comply ultimately get passed on to consumers through higher prices and make it difficult to compete in a landscape where rules and fees could vary widely from city to city. House File 1504 creates a level playing field for businesses in Minnesota and prevents the creation of punitive policies that drive consumers across city borders or to online solutions. Thank you for bringing this legislation forward. We appreciate your support of policies that keep Minnesota businesses growing and competitive. Thanks for your time.
Ms. McMillan, thank you. You may want to stand by. There may be some future questions here. Mr. McElroy, followed by Ms. Hubbard, and then Ms. Bessie, followed by Ms. Brighton, Felicity Brighton. Mr. McElroy, welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name for the record, sir, and tell us who you represent and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chairman and members, my name is Dan McElroy. I'm Executive Vice President of the Minnesota Restaurant Association and hold the same position with the Minnesota Lodging Association. Our associations support Representative Nash's bill and thank him for offering it. I do want to comment that the ordinance passed in Minneapolis exempts food service in restaurants and hotels principally. We've reviewed about 250 of the ordinances across the country that have been passed. About two-thirds of them exempt food service, about a third do not. And interestingly, that's out of a little over 19,000 cities, about somewhere between 250 and 300 have enacted ordinances to restrict, tax, or charge for bags. Bags are important principally to restaurants. Hotels use them for their gift shop or some other kinds of things if they're transaction bags. Process bags you may hear about are bags that aren't used for things like lining waste baskets and lining ice buckets. Those are also important. Those are less often regulated. Process bags are really important to nursing homes and hospitals, and as this issue is discussed, that's important. But for transaction bags, bags are important to restaurants because it varies from very small amounts of what we sell is taken home or away from the restaurant for consumption to some restaurants where nearly 100% of what they sell is consumed away from our premise, and they need a bag to get there safely. Reusable bags are not appropriate, the cloth bags, for most food items because of the possibility of bacteria or food residue getting into the bag. We can use paper bags for many things, but there are some things where plastic bags are necessary for things like Dairy Queen's ice cream cake. They have tried transporting them in paper bags, and it simply doesn't work. There's too much condensation as the cakes change temperature. We are very concerned about a random pattern of differing regulations in different communities. Of the 9,500 restaurants in Minnesota, a significant number are brands. People have purchased franchises from companies like Dunn Brothers or Dairy Queens or others. There is a desire to have consistency among the brand image and the materials used.
Mr. McGraw, we're going to ask you to wrap your comments, sir.
Yes, and that becomes difficult if the laws vary. So we appreciate this bill and ask for your support.
Thank you, sir. Again, as we're asking all testifiers to hang tight because there may be some member questions. Ms. Hubbard, welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, committee members. I'm Susan Hubbard, and I'm with Eureka Recycling. We're a 16-year-old nonprofit in Minnesota, and our mission is to demonstrate that waste is completely preventable. We are here today to speak against this bill. For the biggest part, because it doesn't allow the local community to provide the protection that we feel like we need in the case of these bags. And so I think the question then is there really a need to be protected from these bags? And I think the information that we have is that, yes, there's an absolute need to be protected from these bags, and that that cities that want to do that should be able to have the opportunity to do that. There's over 100 billion just in the plastic, there's over 100 billion single-use plastic bags that are used in America every single year right now, and less than 5% of those bags ever get recycled. And I'm sure you've seen them hanging off of trees and hanging off of fences, but what you haven't seen are the ones that land in our lakes and our rivers and our streams and start breaking down. And the thing about these plastic bags is that when they do break down, they don't really go away. What happens is that they just get small enough to look like food for the wildlife and the marine life that then proceeds to eat them. And I bet, like myself, many of you are big outdoor enthusiasts, and I've grown up in a family that's been fishing forever. We love fishing, and it's been a big part of our family experience. What's happening right now is that I'm sure you've heard also about the garbage patch that's out in the ocean, this big patch of plastic that's swirling around in the ocean. What they found now is that Lake Superior has 24 times the amount of these microparticles in the water as are experienced in that part of the ocean. So it's a terrifying number that we're looking at in terms of our own lakes. And what's happening is when the fish eat those and we eat the fish, we're eating the plastic, and this is a huge experiment on our children. So why do we need to be protected from these disposable bags? I think that's the reason why we're here today. The thing about these ordinances that are effective and work is that we have these bad habits. Yeah, we all have a bad habit. We forgot the bag. We forgot the bag. And it's like all of our bad habits, we need to replace it with a good habit. And we need motivations to do that. This ordinance provides motivations for people to change their habits and to be able to help us and support us to have new habits that aren't going to endanger our environment and our health. So lastly, I just want to say we're not here to beg you to pass a bag ban for the entire state. That is not what we're here to do. We're saying don't take away our right to protect ourselves and to have the ordinances that we want to have in our communities to protect ourselves. And I appreciate the time that you've given us here today, and I, of course, would stand for any questions that you have. Thank you.
Ms. Hubbard, thank you. Hang around as we've been asking all testifiers to do. We'll see where the committee's at. Ms. Bessie, followed by Ms. Brighton, and then Mr. Gordon, and our final testifier that I have on our list that has asked to testify would be Ms. Gauthier, and then anyone else who is interested in testifying, ask you to get in line, and we'll give you a chance to speak as well. So, Ms. Bessie, welcome to the committee, and if you'll state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair, committee members. I'm Keiko Vesey. I am board chair of Linden Hills Power and Light, a community-based nonprofit that works to combat climate change by reducing our local carbon footprint. Thank you for the opportunity to speak in opposition to House File 1504. I'm not going to speak to the merits of the plastic bag ban, as others have and will, but rather that municipalities should have the right to enact such measures at the local level. This is a perfect opportunity for local units of government to innovate and lead and come up with solutions that address the values of that particular municipality and its constituency. There's a very narrow economic interest working here to protect the old way of doing business. This economic interest doesn't concern itself at all with protecting the environment, human health, or even efficient use of taxpayer dollars. Its only interest is in protecting the status quo. Because after all, 100 billion single-use plastic bags per year is an awful lot of revenue. The industry will try to say that their bags are recyclable, so there's really no problem with them. But in reality, very few facilities or programs or good uses for exist for recycling this material. And the vast majority of plastic bags are never recycled. Generally speaking, local governments are the ones that are responsible for the programs and the cost of waste processing. And plastic bags in the waste stream cost local governments a lot of money. In San Jose, prior to the passage of their plastic bag ban, they estimated that they spent over $1 million a year to repair the recycling equipment from damage that was caused by plastic bag jams. So if local governments have to pay for the recycling and waste hauling and processing, shouldn't those local governments have the ability to exert some control about what goes into the waste stream? Isn't that their right? In fact, isn't it their obligation? Local retailers may say that differing local ordinances will be a costly, inconvenient, and complicated hassle to administer. But in reality, it's nothing more than a simple point-of-sale transaction. Many small independent retailers, as well as large retailers, have either offered a creditor discount when customers bring their own bags or implemented a system whereby customers pay for bags or bring their own. Finally, local governments have over 10 years and over 150 other municipalities' experiences and lessons to build on. The Minneapolis policy reflects many of these lessons with common sense and reasonable exceptions built in, as Mr. McElroy will attest. Other local governments will develop and tailor solutions that best meet the unique needs of their community. So this is one of those cases where local truly is not only better equipped to design the best policies, but deserves the right to do so. Thank you.
Thank you for your time, and I will again invite you to hang around in case there are member questions. Ms. Brighton, or is it Britton or Brighton?
Britton.
Sorry. Ms. Britton, welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Felicity Britton. I'm a member of Linden Hills Power and Light, and we oppose the ban on plastic bags and fees. Do we need a plastic bag ban? The answer, my friends, is blowing in the wind. When other countries and cities have introduced bans and or fees, the behavior change and the impacts are dramatic. When Ireland imposed a plastic bag fee in 2002, within weeks, use of plastic bags dropped 94%. One of the largest opponents to that ban, Fergal Quinn, who was a founder of Ireland's largest chain of supermarkets, quickly changed his tune. He said, "I spent many months arguing against this tax. I thought customers wouldn't accept it, but I've become a big, big enthusiast." He says, "We were using millions of plastic bags a year, and they were all being imported and only used once. Now we're saving the environment, we're reducing litter, and since we're not paying for bags, it ultimately saves money for us and reduces the price of food for our customers." Some quick statistics from other American cities who've passed bans or fees. LA County, 95% reduction of all single-use bags and a 30% reduction of paper. San Jose, 89% reduction of plastic bags in storm drain systems, 71% reduction in creeks and rivers, 59% reduction in streets and neighborhoods. People reported 54% of bags used by customers were reusable, and 44% of customers did not use any bags. There's statistic after statistic where it's just huge reductions in this litter and pollution. In Washington, D.C., they imposed a 5% fee, and it went from 22.5 million bags to 3.3 million bags in the first month. People do start using the bags. I'm from Australia, and I can tell you that a lot of cities have introduced bag fees, and people just start keeping the reusable bags in their cars. It's like Susan said, you change habits because you don't want to pay that fee. The author of the bill says that plastic bags are infinitely reusable and recyclable. The statistics say otherwise, the facts say otherwise. They're used on an average of 12 minutes and then not recycled. In Minneapolis, we have access, 90% of the population has access to plastic bag recycling, and less than 5% are recycled. So we have it, but we don't use it. California mandated recycling of plastic bags, and still less than 5% of people recycle plastic bags. When they are recycled, they're downcycled, meaning they're made into something that once made can't be recycled again. So plastic bags cost millions of dollars per year to clean up. They clog stormwater drains, cause flooding, and they harm wildlife. With the existing Minneapolis ban ready to start in April, we have the opportunity to use that as a pilot, and people can learn from what happens there.
Ms. Bridget, I'm just going to ask you to wrap up. You've got about 3 minutes that you were on deck here.
Please do not take away the right of cities and counties to self-determine whether they do or do not want to ban plastic bags.
Thank you for being with us today. Mr. Kim, are you a member of the City Council of Minneapolis?
Yes, I am.
Then let me properly introduce you. Councilmember, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
I'm delighted to be here. Thank you so much, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Cam Gordon. I'm Minneapolis City Council member for the 2nd Ward. I'm also a minority leader on the Minneapolis City Council and the lead author on the ordinance that we refer to as a bring-your-own-bag ordinance. I take very seriously my responsibility, and the city takes very seriously our responsibility to manage the waste in the city of Minneapolis. We spend a lot of money on it. Appreciate that the legislature has allowed us to have the freedom to manage that waste and to deal with it, and we think we are doing so in a responsible manner. I also take very seriously my responsibility and obligation to my constituents to represent them well and to pass legislation that they support and that they will back up. And I did this piece of legislation particularly in response to how can we better manage and deal with our waste in Minneapolis. It's a very unique situation in Minneapolis, I think, in the state. We have about 10 square miles. We have over 400,000 people. We produce an enormous amount of waste. I also have a lot of expectations from my constituents that it's my responsibility to help make this a better city. I've been on the council now for over 10 years. Ever since I got on, I've been hearing about concerns about plastic and litter, and also about what can we do as a city to better protect our environment. I've gotten emails every spring about why are there all these bags blowing around. I've gotten questions about how long am I going to have to wait to get this bag taken out of the tree. Is it stuck up there? People send me pictures of that. We have block clubs that do major cleanup of our rivers. I happen to have the Mississippi River and the River Gorge, the only river gorge in the entire country going going through my ward. We have major river cleanups where people go in and pick up the garbage and bring it out, and they wonder, why can't we deal with all these bags? I do also want to be very, very clear that this is not a bag ban. With this ordinance, we are going to have plenty of plastic bags in our city. In fact, we met with businesses, we met with others, we tailor-made this. I think we got a lot of support. We heard talk about processed bags, takeout bags, lots of bags are excluded. We're just narrowing in on one specific type of bag. It's that single-use carry-out bag that people get so many of, they pile up in their houses, and they want a little help managing. We've actually seen grocery stores in the city of Minneapolis, Aldi's, Whole Foods, a lot of our food co-ops have quit using those a long time ago. Some of them have already actually have a whole system in place where you not only don't get a plastic bag, you pay for the paper bag if you use it. We use that system. When this became a big hot-button issue for my constituents, I started looking at what other cities were doing. In fact, I'll tell you, it became a bigger hot-button issue because every time another city would do something and there'd be an article in the paper, look what Seattle did, Austin, Texas did something, Washington, D.C., why aren't you doing this? What are you doing over there, council member? Why don't you take some kind of action and follow this lead here for us? We don't want to have to deal with this. So I looked into it. State of Hawaii has done it. We also had countries that have looked at this issue and dealt with it. So we did so carefully. I think we've got a thoughtful ordinance that I think is going to work for the city of Minneapolis. I don't know if it will work anywhere else, and I don't expect it to. But we want to be able to try it out. We passed it after a year of study, talking with lots of businesses. We have small businesses who bought into and ready to
do it. Councilman Gordon, I'm going to ask you to wrap your thoughts.
That's fine. I think you've got the gist of it, but I'm happy to take any questions. As you can probably tell, I've learned a lot about this, and I'm ready and eager to talk about it for another couple hours.
Thank you, sir. We, unfortunately, do not have a couple of hours to engage in discussion with you. Ms. Gauthier, we are going to invite you forward. Ms. Gauthier is the last testifier that I have on the sign-up list. If there's any member of the public who would be interested, see James. He'll get you in queue and get you going. Ms. Gauthier, welcome. Identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Greta Gauthier. I'm the Legislative Director at the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on House File 1504. Mr. Chairman, the Pollution Control Agency opposes this bill. The reason for that is that the legislature in statute has placed on counties, cities, and other local governments the responsibility for managing solid waste. This bill takes away a potential tool for cities and local governments to use in managing their solid waste in their communities, which, as I said, is the legislature and state law requires them to handle. There are various reasons why a community would want to consider policies on plastic or paper bags. Some of those are reducing litter, increasing the use of reusable bags in order to reduce environmental impacts, improving recycling, and et cetera. If a committee is looking at a policy on paper or plastic bags, we encourage them to define their goals, whatever those are, litter reduction, recycling increases, and then tailor their city policy toward their goals. This bill prevents that conversation from even occurring at the city level. And so we serve as a resource to local units, and this is a guide we put out recently for local units on product bans and restrictions. And just, again, Mr. Chairman, this bill would take away one of the tools that local units governments have right now, and so we oppose the bill.
Ms. Gauthier, thank you for your testimony. It looks like we do have one member of the public, and members, I also want to draw your attention that in your packets, some individuals chose not to testify in person today, but to provide written testimony on that. And ma'am, we'll have you come forward. You're certainly welcome to the committee and want to hear from you. Again, if there's any other members of the public, please see James. He'll get you in queue here. Ma'am, welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Charlotte Labutoir. I live in Minneapolis, and I have never testified before, but I felt really strongly about this issue. And I just want to say I do oppose this bill, and I'm really grateful to Cam Gordon and Abdi Murasami for coming up with the idea for the bag ban and following in other cities' footsteps. I've had the pleasure of living in cities that do have bag bans. They're beautiful, they're green, they're leading the country in this way, and I want to see Minneapolis do the same thing. I've also worked for retailers that don't provide plastic bags, like Whole Foods, and there are still plenty of plastic bags for fruits and vegetables. They're just not there to carry the groceries home, and no one seems to have a problem with it. So I just, for the health of my family and my own city, I really want to be allowed to participate in a bag ban and see that happen in Minneapolis.
Well, for the first time ever doing this, you handled it like a pro.
Thank you. Thanks.
Is there anyone else from the public who would wish to testify on the matter? Seeing none, Representative Joaquim, you have a letter that was submitted that was not in the packets, and I'll give you a couple moments to brief members, and then we'll get that to the committee administrator, who can get it out to all members as well. Representative Joaquim, give you a moment or so to be able to share the thoughts on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Nash, I'm sorry, I just got this morning, otherwise I would have shared it with you. The city of St. Louis Park, which is one of the two cities I represent, spent 20 months looking at this, working with stakeholders and businesses and citizens, and this handout, the one pager, just kind of describes what they went through. They chose not to, after talking to all those stakeholders, to put a ban on plastic bags. So I just wanted to show this as an example of how good local government can work, and why I have to respectfully oppose this bill, because I think this is an issue that does belong in local control. And it was interesting that Ms. McMillan had mentioned that, you know, this was pretty innocuous, a plastic bag ban. What, I'm surprised that we're even discussing this at a statewide level, actually. I'm having a tough time with removing a lot of the control we have for the cities. And then I have just one quick technical question on the bill that I don't know if council will be able to address, or
Representative Joaquim, what I would like to do is hold all those kinds of questions from members until we get through amendments and then member discussion.
Sounds good.
And go from there. And again, we are looking at approximately plus or minus 8 o'clock tonight if we do need that time this evening to finish up this bill. With that, let us move to amendments. And when wishing God for amendments today, Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would like to move the A7 amendment.
Representative Nelson moves the A7 amendment. Representative Nelson to the A7 amendment.
And, Mr. Chair, this is kind of a, not just this bill, but we've had seen a lot of preemption bills in this committee so far this year. And as we all know, in this committee or the state, the powers that municipalities have, they are creations of the state of Minnesota. That the powers that they exercise are powers that are duties that we have given them to exercise. And what this amendment does is gets rid of all those municipalities and brings that power back to the legislature. If we continue down this road of one by one picking away at taking away the powers and preemption of powers, we might just as well take over that responsibility ourselves. And so that's what the A7 amendment does, Mr. Chair. I mean, if we're going to go to spend this session preempting everything the cities do, we might just as well take those powers back ourselves.
Well, Representative Nelson, a very brave and bold move on your part. Let's see what the author of the bill has to say.
Mr. Chair, I would urge a no vote.
Any other discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Nelson.
We all know this is tongue-in-cheek, and like I said, but this
I thought you were serious.
But Mr. Chair, we all know this is tongue-in-cheek, and this is going down this. But this is what we've been doing all sessions. We've been preempting the cities. Again, this is against local control that we're doing out there. Some of these decisions that, because one person doesn't like it in another part of the state, we're trying to prevent other cities from taking their local control and doing the things that they want to do, that they think are best for their citizens of their municipality. And I think it's a dangerous path that we've been going down this whole session. But with that, Mr. Chair, I withdraw this motion.
Representative Nelson withdraws the A7 amendment. Other amendments to be offered today? Representative Freiberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to offer the A1 amendment.
Representative Freiberg moves the A1 amendment. Representative Freiberg to the A1 amendment, please.
I just found it all. When I read the bill over the weekend, I just couldn't believe it was. I was surprised it was called the Consumer Choice Act. I mean, what it's doing is taking away the choice of local governments to adopt it. So all this amendment would do is just get rid of the name, just because it seems a little Orwellian to me. I also submitted another amendment, the A2, which I don't know that I agree with that characterization, but I think it's at least as equally legitimate characterization of the bill in some people's mind, I would think. So I'm just going to offer the A1. I spoke to Representative Nash about it. It sounded like he might be amenable to just getting rid of the name of it.
We will, before we go to Representative Nash, you're not planning on offering the A2, you just want the A1 at this point?
Yeah.
All right, Representative Nash to the A1 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Freiberg, you know, it doesn't substantively change the goal of the bill, and if it would if it will gain your yes vote, then I'm happy to accept your amendment.
Representative Fabry, you want to respond to that?
I'm not committing to that, but I appreciate your openness.
Mr. Chair, I see no reason. This is a friendly amendment, and again, it doesn't change the substantive goal of the bill. And I appreciate Representative Freiberg's deep consideration of voting yes on this bill. I think there's probably a little something there to work with, but that's fine.
Other member discussion on the A1 amendment? If not, all those in favor of the A1 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
No.
Back to the additional amendments, the A4 and the A5 amendment.
Pass or not pass?
Representative Lee.
Mr. Chair, did that amendment pass or not pass?
I'm sorry. The amendment did pass.
Thank you, sir.
I thought you had as good a hearing as I did, Representative Nelson, as a former chair.
Well, Mr. Chair, for the record, it needs to be.
Fair enough. Representative Lee.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to offer the A4 amendment.
Representative Lee offers the A4 amendment to the A4 amendment. Representative Lee.
So, Mr. Chair, to allow local officials to make decisions that best represent their communities, I'd like to offer the A4 amendment. And what this does is will allow local governments who have already passed an ordinance to continue to implement and enforce it.
Representative Nash to the A4 amendment as the bill's author.
Members, in the essence of brevity, I would urge a no vote.
Other discussion on the A4 amendment? Representative Nelson.
I'd like a roll call on this.
Representative Nelson requests a roll call on the A4 amendment. The clerk will take the roll.
O'Driscoll?
No.
Pugh?
No.
Bliss?
No.
Fenton?
No.
Freiberg?
Yes.
Halverson?
Yes.
Jessup?
No.
Lee?
Yes.
Mason?
Yes.
Nash?
Nope.
Nelson?
Yes.
Peterson?
No.
Quam?
Yeah.
Samstead? Swinzinski?
No.
Tice?
No.
West?
No.
Joachim?
Yes.
There being 11 ayes and 10 nays, the amendment fails and is not adopted. To the A5 amendment? Six. Six yeas and 11 nays. The amendment still does not pass. Even on the recount from the Government Operations and Elections Policy Committee. To the A5 amendment, anyone? Seeing none, we are done with the A5 amendment. We are now to member questions. Representative Joachim, you had a technical question, so I'm going to come back to you before I take any other member questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I have a question on lines 1.13 and 1.14. You mentioned reusable bags. To me, that definition, I don't know if we have one in statute, is ones that you can buy at the store that can be used, like the canvas totes and things. And it mentions that they can't be taxed. Now, you mentioned a political subdivision. We have a lot of local city sales taxes. So does that mean that the city can't collect their city sales tax on that bag then?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Nash.
Given that I am not a lawyer, nor do I ever play one on television, I would ask
Ms. Dyson. I think this one might be coming to you.
Sorry, I just thought of it. Otherwise, I would have asked you sooner. Sorry.
Ms. Dyson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Joachim, I'm not sure if this would relate to local option sales taxes. Those are usually specifically authorized, and so, but I know just a little bit to be dangerous with tax stuff, so this is, but one of the questions I know that always comes up with local option sales taxes or anything to do with sales taxes is the streamlined sales tax agreement, and I don't know if this would interact with that or not, but I, so there may be a question that in the use of the word tax in the bill and whether or not that's appropriate when I think that cities are looking at fees on this. So I think the use of the word tax might
need to be clarified.
And Mr. Chair, and
Joaquin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and maybe Representative Nash can check that out before the bill moves on, I mean, as it moves through the process. And
Mr. Chair and Representative Joaquin, I'm happy to do that. As you know, I'm more than happy to work with you on clarifying questions. So I will take that as a note and find myself a tax lawyer, and we'll talk through that one.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And number one, I'd like to ask for a roll call on the bill. But Mr. Chair, where are we sending this bill?
Representative Nelson, this bill is scheduled to go to the General Register after this committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, because it's dealing with the part subdivision or subsection 3 that's dealing with subdivision 3 that's dealing with tax and banning of tax, shouldn't this need to go to the tax committee?
Representative Nelson, it is my understanding that the tax committee has not asked for it. In keeping with our custom and use, we'll bring it to the General Register. If there is an issue that it needs to be referred to taxes, we do those kinds of referrals many times during the session, and we'll take it from there if the tax committee does step up and say that the chair of that committee wants to see it.
Mr. Chair, I think we should inquire into that before it gets too far down the road. I know the tax committee doesn't have deadline, some of the deadlines that other committees have, but it would, not that I'm trying to be helpful to Representative Nash, but if he wants this bill to get passed and it doesn't go to taxes, somebody could object to it on the floor and end up killing the bill because of that, because it didn't go there. But
Representative Nelson, we'll take it under advisement. Today we're going to send it to the General Register and we'll do some more work on it. And if need be, we will do a referral. As I said, it's been custom in use, and I think we've been doing that a number of times this session already. Other member questions? Other member questions? Representative Tice.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll try to break my speed record from the other day. Representative Nash, I'm really pleased to see this, because even though we keep talking about local control, it really isn't just local control, because it does spread out across the state. If you've got a chain of grocery stores who all of a sudden, you know, now cannot use plastic bags and they have to use paper only, that does affect my district. That does affect my area, and it affects everybody across the board. When I look at why we started using plastic bags in the first place, is because it was the cost of paper and it was so high. And grocery stores like to keep their prices down. So in essence, what we're doing is probably looking at a price hike, because we're putting the fact that people are choosing. It's people who are littering. It is not the plastic bags. It is not the stores that have the plastic bags. It is people. So now we're making them accountable for the fact that we're doing a really bad job of not telling people or keeping them better informed of what to do for recycling. We recycle all the time, and we always have. And when I take my big bag full of plastic bags to my Colburn store, which recycles them, they're always full. There are a lot of people who are doing the right thing. But also, when I walk around, I see cigarette butts, I see candy wrappers, I see, you know, cans. Are we going to start doing that as well? And I don't think so. I don't think we need to do that. I think we need to do a better job of educating and teaching people that this is what recycling is for. Because it is the people's behavior that is doing this, not the cost, not the grocery stores or the other stores that are using this to keep their prices down. The reason I really get upset with these types of things is that all of a sudden local control means you can tell a business how to do business. And what you're doing is making decisions not based on anything other than the fact that it is pollution. We need to do better education. We have a place by the lake, but I'm not telling you that I'm seeing a lot of plastic bags in the lake, which has a river going through it. What I'm seeing a lot more of is cans and wrappers and things like that. We're not seeing the plastic bags that everybody's talking about. I see plastic bags used all over the place. And, in fact, having a dog, I'm now thinking, man, my budget's going up, because now all of a sudden I have to buy poop bags when I take them around. There are a lot of folks who do reuse these. And I really dislike the fact that all of a sudden everybody's bad and nobody recycles. That's not true. We have all the recycling bins around here. It's a little bit to the nth degree, because I'm not really pleased with having compost open in our area next to the mousetraps. I think that's not exactly the coolest thing ever. But what I do think is it's not just local control. It's now you're controlling your businesses without having a good picture of what this will really mean to your businesses. The reason the plastic bags came in was because they wanted to keep the cost down for the consumer. Now we're saying, oh, but a lot of people pollute. They pollute no matter what. It doesn't matter. So all of a sudden you're going to see what? You're going to see something else laying around. Like I said, I can't stand seeing cigarette butts. We do nothing about that. Pop cans, we're not going to do anything about that, or bottles. Local control is local control, but I think this is trying to control businesses, and that's the part that really, really, I have a hard time wrapping my head around. What we're going to do is raise costs, and I can't stand that.
Representative Fiverr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just kind of have to respond to that a bit. I mean, governments at every level regulate businesses, regulate behavior, all the time, whether you're talking about building codes or occupational safety and health regulations or recycling programs, which the Ms. Gauthier mentioned, is an area that has been delegated to local units of government. And here, this bill would take away that authority in one potentially important area. And, you know, these are the sorts of things that local control is intended for. Local control is really important. I could see lots of reasons why a city might want to adopt this. If a city is located near an environmentally sensitive area, that city might be particularly desiring of passing some sort of limitation on the use of materials, which we heard can land in lakes and can end up being ingested by wildlife there. If you have a city that's located near national park land or just any sort of environmentally sensitive area, these are important. You know, we heard about the detailed process from Councilmember Gordon, and thank you for being here, that Minneapolis went through and ultimately arrived at a fairly limited ordinance that was not super large in scope. We heard about how the city of St. Louis Park, on the other hand, went through a similarly extensive process and decided not to do that. That, to me, says that local control is working. This has been done in other jurisdictions without bankrupting areas. I think we should trust our cities and counties in Minnesota to be able to do this, rather than taking away their authority, as this legislature seems to be doing time and again during this session.
Representative Joachim.
I'll make this quick. Thank you, Mr. Chair. We give cities legal authority to do things that the state doesn't do themselves. And we have put trust in our cities. And I'm glad Representative Freiberg mentioned St. Louis Park again. They spent 20 months looking at this with their stakeholders with public input that was incredibly high. And we keep forgetting that local control and local governments are about that public input. Now match that up, those 20 months, to 45 minutes spent here at the legislature that's going to affect every city and take away their rights to talk to their citizens about this issue. So I just want you to think about that when you think about local control.
Seeing no other member questions, Representative Nash renews his motion that House File 1504, as amended, be re-referred to the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Oh, we had a roll call. I knew that was on the amendment. All right, the clerk will take the roll.
O'Driscoll?
Aye.
Okay. Pugh?
Aye.
Bliss?
Aye.
Fenton?
Aye.
Freiberg?
No.
Halverson?
No.
Jessup?
No.
Lee?
No.
Mason?
No.
Nash?
Aye.
Nelson?
No.
Peterson?
Aye.
Quam?
E.
Sandsted? Swadzinski?
Aye.
Tice?
Aye.
West?
Aye.
Joachim?
No.
There being 10 ayes and 7 nays, the bill is passed and referred will be referred to the General Register. Members, there is no other business before the committee. We are